I'm kind of obsessive. I don't have any hobbies. My hobby is photography. In fact, really, I run a small business, and sometimes I even get to take pictures. That's really what being a full-time photographer means.
This is Shamir Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/free-business-bundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/free-business-bundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Hey, everybody. I'm here with commercial business photographer Levi Sim. Levi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to talk with you.
And, you know, it's so funny because as long as I've known you, which it's been, let's see, we first met face-to-face end of last year, 2015, and I've had various interactions with you, and I feel like this interview has been a long time coming. So we're finally getting to sit down and chat about you, which I'm super excited about.
Well, thanks. I'm also a podcaster, and so I'm more accustomed to sitting on your side of the microphone. But
yeah.
just like photographers who say, I belong on the other side of the lens, you know, who won't be in pictures. I think it makes you better at whatever you do to try it from both sides.
And absolutely.
Especially photography. So I'm ready.
And you totally have a point because I've been on other podcasts as the person being interviewed. And I think it's easier being the one asking the questions and just
yeah,
like
too.
Taking the photos.
Me too. I feel like I'm rambling and well, just stop me if I go on.
Oh no, it's all good. This is just a laid back conversation.
Excellent.
Cool. Well, I know about you and I've interacted with you, but for those listening who may not be familiar with you, Levi, could you give us an overview of yourself, your background, and how you ended up doing what you do today?
Oh, man. Yeah. So I'm a full-time photographer and I've had 40 different employers before quitting my last job to be a full-time photographer.
Did you say 40?
40, yes.
Wow.
I've had a lot of jobs.
Awesome.
I've never been fired. but you know, when you start working when you're 14 or 15 years old, you get a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done a lot of different things. But in high school, I loved making pictures. I loved doing photography. I spent all my time in the darkroom. I shot as much as I could, which wasn't actually that much. I ended up spending a lot of time in the darkroom fiddling with the crummy pictures I'd already made rather than going out and making new crummy pictures. But it was, you know, it's just a little bit of the situation. You don't have as much availability to go out and shoot as a student, perhaps, with a job in the afternoon. So, but I absolutely loved photography. And then, somebody convinced me you can't really make a living as a photographer. And for some reason, I believed him.
Mm.
And so for 12 years after high school, I didn't take any pictures at all. And then in 2009, my dad had been getting back into photography, which his SLR was the first camera I ever used in high school. And my older brother had bought a Nikon D40 recently. And so they were kind of excited about making pictures. And as many of us experience, whatever the older brother gets into, I usually dabble in at least. And this time I planned to make a business of it before I even owned a camera. And So I bought a Nikon D90, and before my camera even arrived in the mail, I'd already attended David Zeiser's workshops, and I'd read Joe McNally's The Hot Shoe Diaries, which you've just got to read if you haven't. And I was just diving in with both feet first or head first or something, and I started shooting pictures, and that was it. So 7 years ago, actually this month, it's April, or it's May right now. Mm-hmm. And about 7 years ago this month. What's today? Is today the 11th?
Today's the 12th at the time of this recording.
Right. So I think it was actually May 16th. Within a month of getting my D90 anyway, I started a photography club in Logan, Utah, where I lived at the time.
Wow.
Because I couldn't find one. It turns out there was a club, but it was quite far from where I was. But I knew if I had other people to work with, I'd just do better learning, and I'd be able to help them, and they could help me, and, you know, thee raise me and I raise thee and we all ascend together kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I started this club, and then I took a class at the community college about Photoshop. And then at the end of that class, they asked me to teach the photography class at the community college. And then, so that was within 4 months of getting my camera. And then within 6 months of getting my camera, I opened a studio with another gal I'd met in town. And a year from that time, I quit my job as an engineer and have been cranking along, making pictures ever since then. And I love it. You know, I get to photograph stuff. I get to photograph my family. I get to teach other people. You and I are both authors at photofocus.com. Mm-hmm. And so that's opened a lot of opportunities for me to teach and be involved in a lot of different things. I've always been a teacher in most of the jobs that I've done. And so I sure enjoy working with other photographers and helping us all become better at what we do. But that's me. I'm kind of obsessive. I don't have any hobbies. My hobby is photography. In fact, really, I run a small business, and sometimes I even get to take pictures. That's really what being a full-time photographer means. And And so I don't see how anybody could get burned out on taking pictures if they did it for a living, because it's such a small part of the living.
It is. And it's something that I think many people don't quite realize. I know I didn't. When I decided to try to make a go of photography as a business, I thought I'd be taking more photos. Imagine that. And making more masterpieces. And I know that I'm doing more of the business stuff. So the marketing and getting myself out there, I have to do that more than I'm actually taking photos. Imagine
that. Absolutely. Yeah.
And what I find interesting about your story, Levi, is that before you even had a camera in your hands, well, you said you did it in high school and then took 12 years off because of what people told you, which I've been there. But when you decided to get back into it, you knew that you wanted to make a business out of it. So I'm curious, what made you, I guess, have the foresight and the planning to know that you needed to educate yourself to make a business out of it?
Oh, that's a good question.
Were you just naturally that awesome, or?
No, not at all. I think I was lucky enough to start reading people like Scott Kelby. Mm-hmm. And then I think one of Scott Kelby's guest bloggers was David Zeiser. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading his blog a little bit, and he was on tour at that time. And fortunately, I got to go to his workshop first, and it was primarily business oriented. I don't know, mostly what I took away from it was business oriented stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just helped me understand that running a photography business has so little to do with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And being, he said, being the best photographer in town has nothing to do with pictures. And I've learned that a lot of different ways and several different times. I think he's absolutely right about that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. Somebody told me maybe that you've got to learn how to do it. I don't know. I think I probably went to these workshops and read the books looking for photography tips and was lucky enough to get some business whacked into my head instead. Mm-hmm. And that certainly shaped everything about the way I shoot. Now, at the same time, I read Joe McNally's blog somehow, and David Zeiser is also a speed lighter. And so I started learning how to light. Mm-hmm. And that also changes your business, because you have to study and practice a lot if you work with a can of light instead of just whatever's available.
Yeah. You know, I know for me, for the longest time, I was a natural light photographer.
Right.
Because I was afraid of light.
I prefer imported light. I buy my unnatural light from a factory in Southeast Asia, where they can low quality artificial light. There's no, you know, light is light. There's no unnatural light. There's available light and there's good light.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm looking at my notes here because I take notes while we chat. And, you know, I just have to make a point. I'm going to try not to turn this into a rant of mine. But you mentioned that people had told you, or a person, people, I don't know how many, that you couldn't make a living, that you could not make a living as a photographer. And just to the people listening, don't ever let anyone tell you what you can and cannot do.
Yeah.
I went to art school. College. Now, before I went to college, you know, in high school, people would say to me, well, why do you want to go to art school? You're never going to make a living as an artist. And so I actually did a short stint at an engineering program in between high school and college because I thought that I would try to be an engineer so I can make the money. Oh, my goodness. You know, I'm so glad I did that short. It was very, very short over the summer, but it made it crystal clear that I had no choice but to go to art school and do something creative. It's just the way I'm wired. So don't let, listening audience, don't let people tell you, you know, what you're capable of. You have to trust yourself, especially when you're built for something. If it's photography or, you know, if you love engineering, if you're built for engineering, go for it. But if you're not, you have to be true to, you know, yourself.
Yeah, and at the time, I mean, it wasn't like I was having my dreams shattered. I didn't have any specific plans at that point to, you know, I wasn't like applying to schools for art or anything. It was just kind of I don't know if it was even an idea to be a professional at that time in my mind.
And also, a lot of people's comments are well-meaning too.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not trying to tear anyone down, but.
Right. I mean, when I told my parents I was quitting my job that had, you know, benefits and I had a mortgage payment and all this stuff, and I'm quitting my job to be a full-time artist. my parents thought I was crazy at that time.
Mm-hmm. And understandably.
I'm not sure they've changed their mind yet, but but they are supportive. And it's not that, you're right, it's not that they're trying to be hard.
Right.
It's just that they're looking out for you.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have a plan to make a living, you are in trouble. And and I can't recommend that you go get a photography degree. There's little reason for it. Mm-hmm. I can absolutely recommend that you go get an accounting degree or a business degree
and then be a
photographer. There's there's little reason to go to a university to study photography. There are some programs that are exceptionally good at training people for life as a professional photographer, but most of the degree programs I've seen at universities are training fine artists, and those are the people who have a really hard time making a living because they don't get any business training. And if you're selling something, that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Send hate mail to Shamira Young at shamirayoung.com. I don't know who that is.
Oh, that was close. That was, info@prophotographerjourney.com, folks. That's one of my, I have several email addresses. But yeah, you know, that's a very good point. And when I was in art school, and I had so much fun in college.
Yes, I'm so jealous that you got to go to art school.
You know,
I would love to be that kind of an artist and learn the training that I would get from art school. I think it's absolutely valuable.
Yeah.
It's just of little value if you're trying to be a professional photographer.
You know, and I'm seeing more and more now in college curriculums, at least from what I've been looking around and trying to pay attention, and I'm seeing them working the business aspect of art and creativity and photography. So if you want to be an artist or photographer, I'm seeing more discussion around the business side, and I'm seeing more classes offered in general on the curriculum of various colleges.
I can't understand why it has taken 200 years to do that, you know?
I know.
It's strange.
You know, and I mean, if I'd been given the choice, I'd probably be in art school now. Like, I'd be in art school forever. It was so much fun.
Right, exactly.
I would do it again if I could, except I wish I had taken more initiative in my college years to learn about business. I probably could have taken a business class as an elective, you know?
Exactly.
I went to a big university and everything was there.
It should be a required minor.
It should. You know, we're required something, you know, because it's so important. Absolutely.
Right. I don't know. Instead of nothing, there's nothing I would give up, but.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, well. And I've seen plenty of super talented people, more talented than myself, in photography, in art, and with a lack of business knowledge, their amazing work is just sitting in their basement, and they're frustrated, and they're hurt, and they're wondering why. Why can't they make a living,
off of knowledge of how to hire somebody.
Yeah.
You know, somebody to be my manager, to be my coach, to be my salesperson, mm-hmm. so that I can be an artist and not get ripped off by somebody taking advantage of me as well. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And now, Levi, just so that everyone's on the same page, what area can you describe to us, the area of photography that you would call your expertise?
Oh, it's definitely photographing people, and I do it in all kinds of different ways. Having said that, I practice everything I can. I try to be good at many aspects of photography. I love photographing a beautiful landscape as much as photographing a beautiful person. Mm-hmm. And I love to photograph flowers, and I love to photograph tennis shoes, and I love to practice all of it. But if I'm out wandering around the desert shooting landscapes for a week, I start looking for a person to put in them. Mm-hmm. And I think people pictures are the most important pictures that we can ever make. No one's going to care in 200 years that I took a picture of Delicate Arch in southern Utah. Mm. But in 200 years, all the descendants of this woman are going to care that I made a picture of her, so they can see how they relate to her. They can see that they have her hands, or that their nose is the same, or they crinkle the same way when they smile. That is valuable and important. And I'm not saying that landscapes aren't, but a mountain has yet to buy a picture from me.
Now, when you say people, are you referring to portraits, or could you give us a little more?
Yeah, portraiture is how I make a living. Mm-hmm. Initially I did a lot of family photography, and these days I do primarily commercial photography to help other businesses grow, and including headshots and live action people at work kind of thing. And I love doing that. Maybe that's why I've been able to keep this job for so long. I'm going 6 years strong as a full-time photographer. That's the longest I've had a single job. So because that's awesome. I get to dabble in everybody else's job for a day or two. And it's a wonderful life. I go to the baker's house and photograph her making cookies. And then I go to this week I'm going to the cleaning company, the housemaids, and I'm going to photograph them at work. And I go to photograph headshots for the realtors and the bankers and the lawyers and the massage therapists. And I go photograph surgeries, live surgeries in theater, scrubbed up in the sterile environment.
Wow.
I've just had a wonderful time making all kinds of different pictures. And if you can get a chocolate factory client, you should always say yes to chocolate factory clients.
There are perks.
There are perks. There's 36 of them around my waistband right now, and growing. They keep getting bigger. Anyway, so primarily photographing people, and if I can photograph a person doing something that they're passionate about, I'm a happy camper.
That is awesome.
Because that's always a beautiful picture. I'm not out to take pictures of beautiful people. Mm-hmm. I rarely photograph models, or I don't hire models to come pose for me. Mm-hmm. I'd rather grab Joe off the street and find a beautiful picture with him than sit there clicking away at somebody who knows how to stand beautifully as a trained model. I think trained models are wonderful, but there's less. When I photograph models, if it's working with them for a job, we have a great time creating something for our client. But like hiring a model to come be in a picture just doesn't sound like fun.
There is a certain magic to capturing someone who, an everyday person, a real person, who's doing something that they are passionate about.
Right.
There's a certain magic there. And actually, that leads me to my next question, which maybe you've already answered it, but I'm going to ask you anyway. So, okay. How do you get yourself inspired for a shoot, for a client?
Oh, I start thinking about all the things that they could possibly need. You know, so for instance, a cleaning client that I've got coming up, I start thinking, where are they? And half the time, I'm also the marketing department for my client. You know, they're like, oh, I need some new pictures for my website. Really, they need an entirely new brand and strategy. And I happen to be the guy that they're calling in to start helping with this stuff. So mm-hmm. I start thinking, well, first of all, I have people I know who can help with branding and strategy and design. And I start referring them to those people as well. But I start thinking, where would this be used? You know, are they getting good traction from leave behind printed materials? Do they do well on Facebook? Is it going to be a Facebook picture? Is it going to be used in a billboard? And I start thinking about all of these. And then I try to come up with a whole lot of pictures that could fill that need that they can use for a while. And so maybe I even start looking at other pictures that are out there. Mm-hmm. I want to look at what other people are doing so that I can see that I'm doing it differently, for one thing. Because if I do the same thing that somebody else does, then I'm like the off-brand of Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to buy the cheap brand of Coca-Cola at the grocery store. They'd rather buy Coke, but it costs twice as much, so they settle for the cheaper guy. And if I try to look just like the Coca-Cola, then I only get hired if somebody's looking for something cheap.
Right.
And if they're looking for something cheap, then I don't want to have that kind of cheap relationship with people. Even if I am cheaper, I don't want them to hire me because of my low price. So I look at other people's work and at other advertising work that's out there, and that can inspire me, but I do my best not to copy it, which isn't that hard not to copy. So that's one of the things I do. And then I start running through gear lists in my brain and thinking of all the things I'm going to need, and then I start writing it down. So I've got a checklist, because it's the worst thing in the world to show up and realize that you left the flash triggers.
Oh my goodness.
On your desk. There are few things as terrible as leaving your flash triggers behind.
I can't imagine what right now, but
I'd rather leave my flashes behind than leave my flash triggers behind. I talk to the client a little more, ask them some more questions about what they actually do need, not just what I suppose they need. And then I stay up all night the day before dreaming of ideas.
And if I may, I want to point out that it seems like you are very conscious of what would best serve your client. You're not making it about you, but you're making it about your client and what they will need and how you can help them, which is huge. Because
yeah,
it's
the only thing.
It's like we're as photographers and as artists, we're so close to our product and that we are so intertwined and passionate with our photography. But when you're making a living off of it and you want someone to pay you for it, more often than not, just about all the time, actually, it's not about you. It's what they need.
Absolutely.
The type of shot or the subject matter. And yeah, it's providing a service and putting them their needs first.
Yeah, and if I'm photographing a portrait client, just a say a toddler for a friend, I want to think about what kind of pictures would make mom cry in 20 years when she looks back at them. What kind of pictures are gonna make grandma cry right now? You know, what's gonna be valuable? What do those pictures look like that really elicit a true look of this child? And it's not gonna be the one where I said, say cheese. It's never going to be that one. And
right.
It's probably not even going to be the one where I'm hitting myself on the head and doing slapstick to get him to laugh. I do plenty of that, but it's definitely the one where they pick up the leaf that has a caterpillar hole in it, you know, and are curious, and they get that little wrinkled furrowed eyebrow. And, and that's the one I wish mom would blow up big, because it's the important picture, but mm-hmm. they always want the smiley picture.
Yeah.
Let's create a new program for portrait clients where you get the pictures that I tell you are important, because
right.
I know best.
We'll call it client education.
That's right. I'm doing you a service by telling you what you want.
Oh my goodness.
No, not really. I actually enjoy working with my clients, and mm-hmm. and they almost always become friends, and we interact afterward because we have fun when we make pictures. Mm-hmm. And that inspires me to keep doing it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you know, the best we can do is try to serve our client and be aware of their needs. And yeah, I'm sure there are times where they, plenty of times with me, where I have my favorites and they have their favorites, you know, but at the end of the day, what's important to me is that they walk away happy.
Skip Cohen. You should follow him if you don't. Skip Cohen.
Oh, he's awesome.
He is always saying this line, and I forget. I don't care who he says it from, because he's made it more famous by saying it all the time. He says, "If I can see the world through my client's eyes, I can sell my client what my client buys."
Ooh.
And that's what they want. I mean, my client wants to buy photographs from me, mm-hmm. and they want the kind of clients they want the kind of photographs that they want. And so I try to imagine what it is that they want and need. And then my client is just happy to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
He also reminds us that beauty is in the eye of the checkbook holder.
Oh, I have to write that one down as well. I'm running out of space here with my notes.
That's right. That's why I don't care if they buy my favorites or their favorites.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's things like this that really make me nerd out when talking about photography business.
Right.
Because there's so much to it. Now, I do want to quickly touch on your typical go-to gear. And I say quickly because I don't believe the type of gear that you have will necessarily make or break you as a photographer. And obviously,
it's so important.
Some gear is better suited for certain situations, obviously. But yeah, it's not going to guarantee you success. However, this is a photography podcast, and I'm sure.
And I'm a gearhead. So
right. And so to help those gearheads out there, to satisfy them, could you tell us what your typical go-to gear is for a portrait shoot?
Yes. And I got to tell you, I counted yesterday, and since 2009, I've owned 24 cameras, 24 changeable lens cameras that are good enough to make a living off of. And some of them I've owned longer than others, but I've shot with almost all brands.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've shot with all brands. Yeah. And I know a lot of good things about them, but what I'm using right now. And so when I say what I'm using right now, it comes from a lot of trying a lot of different things and figuring out what really works well for me. And so I'm using the Lumix cameras, Lumix, the Panasonic brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a mirrorless camera, and they're not full frame. They're not cropped. They're tiny. They are Micro Four Thirds, which is like a quarter the size of full frame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's marvelous. It is so good. And so I love it. I love using their prime lenses. They're fast, like my slowest lens. When I was shooting full frame bodies, I was always pursuing fast glass, you know, the 2.8s, the 1.4s. My slowest lens now is a 2.8. And I hardly use it because it's so slow.
No kidding.
it's so dark. Yeah, I've got 1.2s, I've got 1.4s, 1.7, 1.8. They're all so bright, and they're so small and light and liberating. I just love it. So if I could brag anymore about the Lumix system, I absolutely would. So my workhorse body right now is the GX8, and it is marvelous. The autofocus system alone makes it worth switching to these cameras. The way that you can focus, how you focus, is just so much better than anything else that's out there. And then I love my 42.5mm f1.2 lens, which is an 85mm equivalent on a full-frame camera.
Okay.
That's kind of like the widest I like to use for most portraiture,
mm-hmm.
Unless I'm doing an environmental portrait showing important environment around somebody. Then I may use my 15mm. And both of these are Leica lenses, by the way, which are just – they're just so good. And so I could make a living with that, with the 42.5 and the 15mm, just using those two. And I primarily do with Lightroom, and I use them. And so with Lightroom doing panoramas,
mm-hmm.
man, I use the 42.5 to shoot landscapes and then make a panorama out of it in Lightroom. And I get a finer perspective and larger subjects. It doesn't diminish and have extreme foreshortening like using a wide angle lens does. And so I could really make a living with those two lenses, but I don't. I've got like 15 lenses.
Well, I have to say, I've seen your camera in action photo walks, and I think you even had it with you in Vegas at WPPI.
I did.
And I was a little jealous. I was a little jealous of the size because it does look
it's so light. Cheap. Yeah, it's so light. It's so inexpensive. I gotta say, it's the only camera I would recommend anybody buy unless they absolutely need, you know, Olympic performance autofocus for moving subjects.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on par with a 1DX Mark II.
Oh, okay.
But it's $1,000, not seven.
Right. Yeah, that's, so, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, there's so few people on the planet who actually need those cameras. They know who they are.
Yeah.
And I used to think I was one of those people because if I had a big camera, I was, you know, a pro.
Oh, of course. But, of course.
But after 6 years of wrist pain, I realized that the pain was actually coming from carrying my camera.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've been pain-free for a couple of years from using this lighter camera as well. It's just really terrific.
So what's your favorite photography accessory other than your camera?
Two or three things. First, a tripod. Using a tripod makes your pictures better. It's the only thing you can buy that actually makes your photography better.
Hmm.
A new camera doesn't do it. New software doesn't do it. But using a tripod will make every aspect of your photography better. And I know you run around chasing little kids and it's too slow, but if you use it, your photography will be better. and so now I use a tripod almost every picture that I sell.
Hmm.
And then the other accessories are the spider holster tools. The spider holster that lets my camera hang on my hip instead of hanging around my neck is just also liberating. It frees my hands and I don't whack people in the face if I bend over. And again, I don't have pain in my neck and shoulders.
It looks cool too. You look like a cowboy.
Absolutely. If Han Solo was a photographer, that's what he would use.
Yep.
So that's why I use it. And then they also have these new hand straps that relieve the stress of holding tightly to your camera with one hand. By having this rigid hand strap that goes around the outside, it's amazing how much less fatigue you feel by using a hand strap like this. So I love the spider holster tools and tripods.
Awesome. Now, for the next part of our interview, I actually, talking about nerding out, I get really, really excited. The meat and potatoes. Let's talk about more about running your photography business, which we've touched on a decent amount about the business side as well. But I'm curious, what's the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself right now? And how do you overcome that challenge?
The most challenging aspect is pursuing new clients.
Hmm.
I need new clients. I need somebody to pay me. My wife needs me to have new clients. My daughter needs me to have new clients. And the most challenging thing about it is just asking somebody for money, which is what I'm doing. I'm asking people to give me money to help them grow. I mean, they get something out of it, of course, but
mm-hmm.
but there's that little trepidation, or there's that something else more urgent to do. I've got to write these emails, or I've got to vacuum the cat, or polish the sensors are dirty. I can't even shoot pictures if my sensor. I better take care of the sensors. You know, so
priorities.
There's all these little sharpening the saw things that can get in the way of the actually important stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really the most challenging thing is getting new business.
So what have you found to be the most effective way to get new business or new clients?
Asking people for it. Hmm. Asking people for business.
Do tell. Do elaborate.
Every time I go out and ask people for business, they give it to me. And so I don't know why I should be anxious about it or slow about it, but I am. I don't know. So I'm in the Chamber of Commerce and I go to the Chamber of Commerce meetings, which mm-hmm. we have every week, and it's just a networking meeting where everybody gets together and introduces themselves to each other and find out about their business. And the best way to handle that situation is to say, "Hi, I'm Levi. I'm a photographer. What do you do? Well, tell me about your work. Oh, have you met this guy over here? He works with people like that. Let me go introduce you to him." And I talk little about myself, but I build a good relationship of being a helpful, friendly fellow. And having done this for a while with those people, I can go up and say, "So, how can I help you grow your business right now? You know, can I help you with some new marketing pictures?" And they say to themselves, self, we like Levi. Let's, you know, we actually do need this. Or they say, no, I don't really need anything right now. And I say, great. How's the pineapple? And we're still just friends. There's no, you know, there's no insult or loss there.
Yeah.
But I've reminded them again that I'm the guy that does that. And right. when they need it, I'm at the top of their mind.
Exactly.
And so the way I also started is I print off some postcard size papers from Vistaprint. It costs, I don't know, $25 or something to print a bunch of 5x7 cards that say, hi, I'm Levi. This is my contact information. Let me know if I can help. And I go door to door to all the businesses in town. Mm. And Scott Bourne calls it owning your zip code. Everybody in your zip code should know that you are a photographer. Mm-hmm. And I just walk around and go to all the businesses and say, hi, I'm your neighborhood photographer. I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm not soliciting anything. I'm not, you know, asking them for money right there. I'm just introducing myself. Mm-hmm. However, every time I do that, a few of them always say, oh, well, we were actually just looking for a photographer, or, oh, do you do headshots? I need a new headshot. And those things are the foot in the door. And then I'm also networked with other people. So if they have other services they need, I can make some recommendations and build a good relationship with folks.
And what I like about that is that you're not being pushy, but you're being helpful.
Right.
And also you made a great point when you said that you're building relationships with your networking groups and the Chamber of Commerce. And I think, I strongly believe that the relationship many times is a prerequisite. It has to come first before they like you, before they trust you, they have to know you, before exactly. they decide to do business with you.
Exactly.
Because I've tried to skip ahead to the, hey, let's talk money, years ago, before actually investing the time to get to know the person and find out what they need. And the results were not good.
But those are the people at the Chamber of Commerce meetings who don't come back the fourth time.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting any results from it.
Right.
But if you're patient, the results come.
Exactly.
I mean, there's room for both. There's places to show up and ask for immediate business, and there's places to build relationships.
Absolutely. And staying top of mind. So even if they don't need a photographer right now, when they do, you want to be the first person that they think of. Like, oh, I know. Yeah, this Levi guy. I like him. You know, he's a cool guy. And that's how it works. They have to trust you above all.
Yeah, this is the part about being the best photographer in town has nothing to do with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I get recommendations from people all the time who've never seen my photographs, but they say I'm a great photographer. And when you're faced with a choice of working with somebody you know and like, or somebody you've never met before, you hire the guy you know and like. Mm-hmm. And that makes it a lot easier for me to get business with folks. And everybody can do this. And if you move in next to me and start doing it too, you are welcome. Come on in. Join in. It doesn't affect me to have other people doing their business next to me. What you do with your business doesn't affect me and mine.
The abundance mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many pictures to be made. There are so many realtors in your town right now that need mm-hmm. a new headshot that there's no reason to not have everybody on your block be a photographer. Lawyers aren't scared about other lawyers opening up shop. There's plenty of work to go around.
And even the whole process of getting people to get to know you is, I'm finding it fun. I just moved to a new city.
Yes.
As of Christmas Eve. And right. So it's been a lot of what feels like, in many ways, starting over as far as meeting people, especially, I'm in Port Huron, so there's a very local feel. So it's not like a super small town, but everybody knows everybody.
Right.
And I know that people have to figure out who this Shamira person is, and do they like me, and do they trust me? And one way I enjoy doing that is I throw headshot parties. I have another one coming up. Actually, I say parties, plural, but I just threw my first one here in Port Huron. And what I did was...
I saw that. It looked great.
Oh, it was fun. It was fun. And that's what I wanted it to be. Thank you, by the way. You know, I had a set number of headshots, a limited amount of slots, because I'm only one photographer. And so I can only do a certain number of people, but I opened it up to the public. And there was light music, there was light food, and the key was I wanted them to get to know me. So there are people who showed up, and they had no intention of purchasing a headshot, which was fine. And actually, if you show up that day, you couldn't get one anyway because everything was full already.
Right.
As far as the slots. But they got to see me in action. I got to talk to them and learn about their business and just interact. And so the week after the headshot party, a woman approached me and she wanted a full session. She had come to the party and just kind of watched, you know, how I interacted with people and had to figure out who I was and what I was about. And only after that was she willing to book a full session. And the session was great. And, you know, it's a process. It really
is. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that first summer I owned a camera, I set up a booth at the farmer's market and just said, let me make a picture with you and your kids and I'll send it to you. And I'm practicing my pictures and I sell portraits as well. And so that day I shot around 60 people.
Oh, how cool.
Now, a couple of years later, I had an opportunity to set up at the home show, the home and garden show. You know, they have it at the stadium at the university. And it's a big event. Uh-huh. And I set up in there and I set up a booth to make pictures of people. And I had a few pictures hanging up, but I had the TV plugged into the camera. And as I shot, the pictures would show up on the screen. And I just invited everybody who walked by to come be in a picture with me. It's free. Just go to this website and you can download it. Come on in. And I shot 1,500 people in that weekend.
Oh, how cool. Wow.
And I actually got my oldest client came to me from that farmer's market the first time. My longest running client, she hired me like 4 months later, just remembered that I had done pictures of her girls and they had fun doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, they got to know me. They had a fun time making a picture. And I wasn't doing smile and say cheese stuff. I was just, I was actually out to make a little bit more, pensive looking pictures. And people had fun doing it. And they mm-hmm. felt like they were kind of acting. And so everybody joined in. And not only did I get a little bit of business from it, but I photographed 1,500 people that weekend.
That's huge. And, portfolio, man.
Well, and just the practice of getting a lot of people in front of your lens. I mean, we're talking about the business stuff, and I keep saying that being the best photographer has nothing to do with your pictures, and that's because I assume that you make a decent picture,
mm-hmm.
and you need to practice. And something like this is a great way to practice. You get to practice your interpersonal skills. You get to practice posing people. You get to practice knowing that because they're sitting 6 inches closer to the light than the person before them, that you need to, you know, knock it down a stop on the aperture. All of these things make you a better photographer and a better relations person,
mm-hmm.
a more relatable person. And so I highly recommend doing some kind of high volume shooting frequently.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Okay, now let's talk about some lessons learned. What's the most common mistake that you see professional photographers make, in your opinion, or that you yourself have made? And I'm not trying to tear anyone down, by the way. It's just, I believe we can learn from each other's mistakes.
Yeah, I think I see people spend money on unimportant things. The wrong gear is obviously one thing. People, I know that you don't shoot a full frame camera right now, right?
I don't, no.
And there are very few people I've met who can elucidate three good reasons why they need a full-frame camera. But I can tell you 3,000 reasons why you don't. Mm-hmm. And they all have a dollar sign in front of them. and I was absolutely besotten with the, you know, the full-frame camera is going to make everything better. And they were new, you know, they were new in the late 2000s. And it feels fun to get new stuff. But
it
doesn't actually make you a better photographer. And it doesn't make your business, like, people don't pay more because you use a full frame camera.
I've never had a client ask me if I'm using a full frame camera.
No, I'm using a tiny little camera that is so small. And it was a concern of mine before I switched to these Lumix cameras that people were going to say, well, why is your camera so tiny? No one has ever asked me. Not one person who wasn't a photographer. Only photographers have asked me.
Exactly.
That concern. And then I say, oh, yeah, you mean like the DSLRs? Yeah, that's the same kind of technology my great uncle used in the Korean War. This happens to be the latest state-of-the-art technology, but we'll talk about that another time. So buying the wrong stuff is obviously a mistake that is so easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then also feeling like you're stuck with something you bought is also a mistake. There's this little place called Craigslist and eBay.
I think I've heard of those.
Yes, it is so easy to get out from under equipment that doesn't please you. If you're not excited to pick up your camera, you need something else. You should get rid of it. And don't feel like, oh, I've got all the lenses. So what? Get rid of them. You can sell them. In fact, I highly recommend you buy used stuff. Buy it on Craigslist, and then you can try it out before you pay cash for it. But again, that's a whole other discussion. I may have made a small business buying and selling cameras and lenses amongst all those 24 bodies I owned as well. Yeah, another thing people spend money on that we don't need to spend money on is things like actions and all the other stuff that makes your picture look exactly like somebody else's. Why would I pay you to make my pictures look like yours? That doesn't make sense to me. But in addition to that, like logos, photographers spend a lot of time worrying about what their logo looks like. And I'm the wrong guy to say this because I've got an awesome logo.
Yeah, but yours is pretty good. It is.
Well, mine looks like me. And if you've met me, then you see my hat. And, you know, I'm always wearing a fedora when you meet me. My logo looks like my face with a fedora on. And, you know, that's cool. It's not a curlicue flower under Captured Moments Photography or whatever your name is. And you don't need to hire somebody to do a logo because you're not Coca-Cola. You're not McDonald's. People don't recognize you by your logo. People recognize you by your smile and by your handshake when they meet you. Logos for people like us just are not important and certainly not worth spending money on for most of us like that. You know, am I way off? I don't know.
No, actually, I think you're on to something, because with your logo, it can be something you can get caught up in. Kind of like,
exactly.
There are things that are more important than that. Now, I will say I learned graphic design before I knew how to handle a camera. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, a logo. Oh, that's right up my alley. You know, I want my logo to be awesome.
Something you can do.
And I do think you should have a professional looking logo. I do. Because when it's on your website, you do want to be taken seriously, but there is so much more than having a logo.
Professionally designed website is definitely a great idea. But if I have to pay extra for the logo on my website, I mean, can't I just have my name, Levi Sim Photography, and look at my gorgeous pictures?
And plenty of people, right, plenty of people do that. And even with the websites, they have, you know, Zenfolio is one what's the other one? Zenfolio and,
yes,
I mean, there's a bunch of them. SmugMug, yeah. And there's plenty of others. My site is Zenfolio for my portfolio, but where they have these built-in presets, these themes, these templates, where you can get a nice, clean-looking site so that you look professional, but also so that your photos can take center stage, which is what you
exactly
want.
Exactly. And then you can get out and spend money on making pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, spend $20 and rent a dress to put on somebody, or $50, however much it costs to rent a dress and hire a person and go to a beautiful spot and make a portfolio picture if that's what you want to do, or spend $50 on gas and go out to that one spot near you that's really photogenic that you don't usually take a trip out to. Spend money on the things that actually grow your business. Spend money on those 5x7 postcards to take around and deliver door to door. Spend money on a new shirt and bow tie to go to the Chamber of Networking meeting. And don't waste money on the things that are actually invisible. I mean, on my website, my pictures are what people remember, not even my name, you know. That's why I wear a name tag, because nobody remembers me. And so having a name tag on is a good tool for me to help people be on equal footing with me, because when I talk to them, I probably remember their name. But that's another idea too.
And
anyway,
I just have to add in, because you mentioned how we shouldn't feel stuck with our gear.
Right.
If we've outgrown it or gotten bored with it. And I don't know how everyone feels about this, but for me, what I found quite helpful is to occasionally rent gear. Now, I make sure that cost is covered when I'm working with a client. I build it in so that, you know, I recoup that cost. And I say occasionally because if you spend, it's easy to overdo renting gear. It is. But
it is.
My current body that I'm using right now, I had rented it I think, twice. And then by the third time, I was comfortable with it. I knew it did what I needed it to do. And I found it, for me, quite affordable. Not much money at all to rent it for a couple days. And I was sad when I had to ship it back. And so by the third time, I knew that I had to actually purchase this because I had outgrown my other one, which these were both. My first one was a Canon. I'm on a Canon right now. I needed to upgrade. And so renting allowed me to rather inexpensively get a feel for what would be a good step up for me.
That's a great idea.
And there are plenty of sites out there. There's Lens Rentals. There's Borrow Lenses is another one. I've used Lens Rentals and been very happy with them.
So, I also use Lens Rentals. I was looking on there yesterday at a lens I was considering, and it costs $14 to rent it for 4 days.
Right? It's crazy how inexpensive it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's marvelous.
Yes.
Yeah, rent lenses. Rent gear.
And they're not paying me to say this, by the way. Right. No money has been exchanged for that, at least at the time of this recording. So.
But she's available, Lens Rentals.
You know, hey, just putting that out there. Uh-huh. So Levi, tell us, what's one thing you wish you knew before you stepped into photography professionally?
Oh, I wish I'd known accounting. And I wish I'd known, accounting. I wish I'd known how to understand where money's coming from and going to.
And that's huge. So with all of your business training that you had beforehand, was accounting kind of a gap for you?
Oh, I didn't have any business training.
Oh, the business classes, or was it the workshops?
No, that's what I mean. I went to a workshop when I bought my camera. I went to another photographer workshop, you know, David Zeiser's wedding and portrait tour. And he happened to talk a lot about marketing stuff, but nobody talks about accounting. Nobody, like that class at WPPI does not sell out.
Oh.
But it should. It should be the absolute sold out show. In fact, you and I are both going to Out of Chicago conference at the end of June. And Tim Wallace is coming there. And he's this wonderful commercial photographer from the UK. And he's going to teach us. I mean, he's the best automotive photographer in the world. But his best lessons are about the business of photography and all this stuff. But even he isn't going to talk about accounting, I think. it is the least sexy subject to learn when you have a camera burning a hole in your pocket. But it's the most important thing to your business is managing money. Are you in this to pay for lenses, or are you in this to make a living? And I'm in it to make a living. And I could do a lot better job of that if I had some plans and goals accounting wise, something to keep me from buying that extra gear.
So what have you found to be helpful? Is there any software that you're using, or if you don't mind me asking?
Oh yeah. You know, things like QuickBooks and FreshBooks and 17 Hats and Sprout Photographer, or what's it called?
Sprout Studio.
Yeah. Sprout Studio. All of these tools are good. I have a bookkeeper. I hired a bookkeeper to help me.
Now see, that's smart too. That's
very smart. She takes a load off by helping me manage those things that I am weak in. And I wish I'd done it sooner. But it's hard too. It's hard to hire somebody for these things. But all of those software options are intended for people like me who don't know how to do it. And I'm so jealous. I hang out with other photographers and they're like, oh yeah, in third quarter of next year, I'm getting a new camera. And I'm like, wow, there's somebody with a plan. They've retired their gear on time and they're they're doing all this stuff. Or they're like, I'm on a 4-year cycle for computers. And I'm like, wow, do I have money in the bank and I see a fancy, shiny new computer? That's my schedule. And my wife would much prefer I have a genuine schedule. So things like that, just basic skills that other business people just know, you know, that is so basic to them. They don't even remember taking a class on it in college, but it's the foundations of all of business and bureaucracy, which is what we have to deal with. And, you know, we've got a lot of accountability both to ourselves and our families, but also to our governments. And if we aren't doing things the right way, they can come calling. So,
oh my goodness. Yes.
I've known three photographers who have been shuttered because of poor accounting and dealing with the IRS. They didn't do what they were supposed to do according to the law, and they are no longer photographers.
Oh my, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's very real and it can be a wake-up call. I mean, my first year? It was in my early years of business as a photographer. And that first year, I didn't set aside money for taxes.
Right.
And when that came due, it was a number that nearly made me cry.
Right.
And I managed to come up with it, but man, that hurt. Yeah. And I knew I had to plan moving forward. So we're all works in progress.
Yeah, I almost bought a car in March. And then my accountant called, and it turns out that the same amount of money I was going to spend on the car is what I owed for taxes. So,
oh, cry yourself to sleep that night.
It's a good thing I didn't buy that car.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of the interview, which makes me sad because I could probably talk for hours about this. But is there a particular photography resource, a tool, an online course, book, whatever, that you would recommend to our listeners to help them with their photography businesses?
Oh, definitely. Not to be self-serving, but photofocus.com is what I started reading when I was a new photographer. And now I'm an author and podcaster there as well. And it is a great resource full of all kinds of business techniques, software techniques, shooting and lighting, gear reviews, all kinds of stuff. And it's published 3 times a day. And we do live webinars and all kinds of things. You'll find an interview I did with Shamira last fall on there too. So. I'd highly recommend photofocus.com. You know, Joe McNally's blog is always a pleasure to read. JoeMcNally.com/blog. And his books, if you need some inspiration and some tips on how to make a better picture, go read Joe McNally. He's got a lifetime of photography under his belt, and his books are just incredible. Oh, there's so many books. So many books. I'd also recommend going to conferences and workshops. There are plenty of online resources, and you should go watch my videos on lynda.com. But besides my videos, you shouldn't really spend your time watching videos. Just kidding. you should absolutely watch videos online, but there is nothing better than going to a place and meeting with other photographers and learning together. And I don't care what you're learning. I don't care who the conference is. You should be there and you should be learning from everything in person. You'll build your network when you go and hang out with people. Mm-hmm. And you should plan to be networking when you go to these things. You should plan to be meeting other photographers. They're not going to be your clients. Don't give them your Moo cards, your Moo business cards that cost you $1 each. Give them your Vistaprint cards that cost 0.01 cents each. Mm-hmm. And just build your network with other photographers, because it's good for you, and then learn with other people. They will ask questions that you don't even think of, and you'll ask questions they didn't think of, and you'll get hands-on experience. And whether or not it's a shooting workshop where you get to shoot too, just go and volunteer as much as possible. If the photographer says, I need someone to hold this reflector, you should be the first one to stand up and do it. Especially if you're the last one to want to do it, you should just try and get up there, because you'll see where he puts the light and where the light stands in relation to the model. And you learn so much more by assisting somebody than you ever will from second shooting. Like, second shooting a wedding is like the last thing I ever want to do in my life, because I don't get to learn anything from a great wedding photographer by being their second shooter. I get to learn everything by being an assistant and helping make the picture better. So I'd highly recommend, anytime you can assist somebody, go do that. And don't photograph weddings. Don't buy a new camera and go be a wedding photographer. I don't know I did, you know, I absolutely went and was suddenly found myself shooting weddings. Mm-hmm. Why is it that we want to be hired to photograph a once in a lifetime event when we have no experience?
You know, I've heard the crash and burn stories. I know there are people who have, there are people, plenty probably, who have been successful at it, but I totally see what you're saying. That's like the first thing people think about. And that was one of the first things I did. When I first started shooting professionally, I nearly grew gray hairs.
Right.
Like, it's such a huge, stressful event.
Why would you do that? No, go photograph four-year-olds. Four-year-olds look the same from the time they're like 4 till they're 6. So you've got lots of makeups. You can reshoot, you know.
Yeah.
And don't photograph your own kids. Photograph the neighbor's kids. You don't want to ruin your relationship or opportunities to photograph your own kids. Hire the neighbors. In fact, when I invite the neighbors to be in pictures, they're excited about it. And my daughter will actually participate at that point.
Oh, that's great.
If I just ask her to do it, she's, you know, she doesn't have the time of day for me. And she's only four. So, but if I can make her jealous about being somebody else being in her pictures, then she'll participate with me. And I get more cachet with my kids over time. What other resources? Conferences. Go to Photoshop World. Go to Out of Chicago. Go to WPPI. Go to PPE. Then go on the tours when Sam Putch comes around. Sandy Putch workshops go around in town. Go to those. Go to the person who's holding a class at your local pro camera store. There are all kinds of classes that you can attend at your local store. And you should go to every one of them. You should go to the local photo club and don't stand for it if it's the kind of club where they just sit there and do travel logs. Mm. Shake it up and invite people to go shooting with you and make it a valuable resource for everybody. When we work together to make our skills better, it's good. And rainbows and unicorns will enter your life.
It is good. Yeah, don't isolate yourself is really what I'm hearing. Get out there and get outside of your comfort zone. And yeah, you need to network with potential clients and getting new clients, but you also need to be exposed to other photographers as well.
You know, and when I lived in Utah and I had that photo club, which is still a strong photo club. If you go to Northern Utah, they meet two or three times a week, and you should absolutely go attend a workshop with the Cache Valley photographers. They do all kinds of stuff. But a third of my clients were other photographers.
No kidding.
Yeah, photographers need pictures too.
That's very true. Oh, that's interesting. Well, my final question for you, but one of the most important. Levi, tell us where we can find you online.
Oh, good. You know, I'm on Instagram just about daily, at PhotoLevi, PhotoLevi. And I write for photofocus.com, so I'd love to know if there's anything I can help you learn, and I'd be happy to write about it or create a video for you. And I'm at levisim.com, but you'll only see one picture there. So yeah, find me on Photo Focus.
Awesome. And I'm looking at your website. I'm seeing more than one picture.
Yeah, but they're all the same.
I'm flipping through them. Oh, but they're nice though. Yeah, there's definitely a theme.
It's the Steve Jobs portrait project.
It's very cool.
That's a fun project I do too. So if you see me at a conference, I'd love to make a picture with you.
And he'll do it. He did it for me. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, just thank you so much, Levi, for chatting with me. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shamira.
Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing? Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center.